Our next case this morning is number 062045, Carl Wagner against Washington County Sheriff's Department. Mr. Bishop.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Michael Bishop, and I represent Carl Wagner, the appellant in this case. The reason that we're here is we're appealing the summary judgment motion that was granted to the defendants by the Honorable Rudolph T. Randa. The basis of the summary judgment motion was that the court found that there was, in fact, probable cause to arrest Mr. Wagner and eliminated all of the claims save for the state law claims. We seek to reverse that decision, and for really the basis for the appeal is that the interpretation of the facts we believe was an error, and we also believe that there were two very significant facts which were not incorporated into the decision in order.
Mr. Bishop, did the Metzgers carry copies of the injunctions with them no matter where they went?
Apparently they had the injunction on that particular day while they were in the parking lot and showed it to the deputy.
Just let me, because I couldn't find it in the briefs. What was the basis for the harassment injunctions against Mr. Wagner? I know that, you know, Metzgers live on land that Wagner owns. What exactly was the basis?
Were an allegation of phone calls, I believe. I'm not exactly certain about what the basis was.
Okay.
What I can tell the court, though, is that it was reviewed de novo because it was a commissioner's decision, and that the case, both injunctions, were dismissed. They were not in effect, but they were in effect on the day in question here, but shortly thereafter they were in fact dismissed.
Well, maybe you can help me with this, because the language of the injunctions does seem rather vague to me. Even if we agree with you that the injunctions didn't permit the eviction and or the arrest of Mr. Wagner, couldn't a reasonable officer have concluded that the injunctions required Mr. Wagner to depart the meeting once the Metzgers arrived?
Well, we're getting into the arguable probable cause, and my position on that would be that the deputies were the ones who created the condition precedent to the alleged violation of the injunction. They placed the Metzgers into the meeting where Mr. Wagner was present, and the meeting was already conducted or already ongoing, and they placed them in there. That's a reasonable inference from the facts, in large part because how else would the deputies be able to identify Mr. Wagner? So the Metzgers are escorted into the town hall meeting where Mr. Wagner is, and then the deputy approaches Mr. Wagner, asks him to come outside, and says, "Do you see anyone in here that has an injunction against you?" They placed the Metzgers in the position to allege that there was a violation of the injunction.
What precisely did the injunction require the Metzgers to do?
The general language that was used. There's no requirement that the Metzgers do anything. The requirement is to Mr. Wagner.
Mr. Wagner.
Oh. One of the requirements is that he avoid the residence or any premises temporarily occupied by them.
And this meeting was held where?
Town Hall, Town of West Bend, Town Hall, public meeting. My client's on the agenda. The property's on the agenda.
Has anyone at any stage in these proceedings suggested that the meeting of premises did not include a public meeting place?
No. In fact, there was a public notice put out for the governmental meeting. There's no dispute.
Anyone suggest that the injunction did not include a public meeting place? The word premises did not include a public meeting place.
I make that argument in large part because of the Article 1, Section 4, the right to petition your government to be in a public meeting, to be especially where you have an item on the agenda, that Analogously, this would be if the Metzgers were in a voting hall, they could stay there all day and deny Mr. Wagner the right to go in and vote.
And the prohibitory verb was avoid, am I correct?
Correct.
So, and he was there first, am I right?
Well, there's a dispute as to that, but there's no dispute that what the Metzgers say is that they saw him enter the building when they were in the parking lot, go into the town hall.
I see.
He was in the meeting first, yes.
Now, and this question of the premises temporarily occupied, there was no definition of what temporarily occupied meant.
Correct, and I don't believe that anything has been litigated, at least in Wisconsin law, that specifically defined what that means.
And that brings me to my question, which is that the relevant language of the injunctions was taken right out of the Wisconsin statute. So wouldn't that suggest that the problem here is one with the statute rather than a problem with the language of the injunctions and how the deputies interpreted it?
Yes, I would agree with that.
But then doesn't that raise the issue of qualified immunity?
Right.
Well, I think it would, except for the fact that one of the facts that was missing from the decision and order is that the deputies placed the Metzgers into the town hall meeting where they knew Mr. Wagner was, and then said, "Do you see them in here?" "Yes, I do." "Well, I believe you're violating the injunction. You need to leave." And he said, "No, I'm here at a public town hall meeting, and I'm on the agenda, and I'm sitting down."
Well, see, the problem is, again, it's the language. Mm-hmm. If you're an officer and you read this, avoid the residence in any premises temporarily occupied by them, that's any premises. The officer reads that and thinks he knows that the Wagners want to enter the premises. It seems to me it's a reasonable interpretation. If it's not reasonable, certainly we're in qualified immunity land.
Well, I would respectfully disagree for this reason. If we talk about what he needs to avoid, if the Metzgers are in the parking lot and Mr. Wagner's in the parking lot, and he enters into the town hall meeting, this is not a Chinese wall that's imaginary or fictional. This is an actual building that is bricks and mortar that he goes into. That is, in effect, avoiding them. But for the fact that the deputies then escort the Metzgers in to the town hall meeting. In addition, the right to be at a public town hall meeting needs to trump this idea that the Metzgers are sitting in the back row, completely devoid of any contact whatsoever from Mr. Wagner.
I'm staring at your white light. That's
right.
All.
Okay. Well, I will save some time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bishop. Mr. Mahip.
May it please the court. On November 13, 2003, a valid harassment restraining order was enforced against Mr. Wagner, and for that reason, this case has been frivolous from the get-go.
If the deputies were aware that Mr. Wagner arrived at the meeting first, what would permit them to conclude that he was obligated to leave the meeting upon the Metzger's arrival? In other words, is it your view that the injunctions gave the Metzgers the right to have Mr. Wagner evicted from any place that they wanted to enter, like a grocery store or the movies, a hospital, even if this man is present first and has a legitimate right to be there?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know the answer to that, but I will tell you this. The deputies, when they were confronted with the situation, acted reasonably. They took reasonable steps to ensure what they were doing was a lawful arrest. And the steps that they took were they reviewed repeatedly the injunction, They read the language of the injunction. Excuse me. They confirmed that Mr. Wagner was in the building at the time that the Metzgers were in the building.
Now that's a question, isn't it? Because, you know, who was in the parking lot, who was in the building?
That's correct. But at the time that they decided to arrest Mr. Wagner, they had confirmed that he was in the building with the Metzgers. They then contacted Lieutenant Martin, their superior officer, and read them the injunction and were instructed to arrest Mr. Wagner. Based upon that, their conduct was entirely reasonable.
Now, doesn't he have a First or a 14th Amendment right to attend a public meeting, especially when his family has an item up for consideration at the meeting?
Yes, I think he probably does. And that's an interesting nuance about this case. Did the deputies place him into this, place my clients into a meeting, thereby planting evidence to create a conspiracy? It's all a very interesting question, but it's irrelevant because the question is, was there a valid restraining order in effect? Yes. Was Mr. Wagner in the premises and in violation of the restraining order? Yes. Was that all confirmed? Yes. And did the deputies act reasonably under the circumstances at that point in time? Yes, they did, and Judge Randa was right to conclude that this case had no merit based upon that.
Did Wagner tell the officers he was there because he had an item on the agenda?
That's unclear.
I know that he indicated. I know he refused to follow their directive twice, but did he tell them he was there because he had an item on the agenda?
I don't know the answer to that question, and that's a question of fact as to whether or not he even had an item on the agenda. It related to his family's parcel, not his own property. And his family was there. So even if he were ejected from this meeting, he had his brother there and his parents were at the meeting. So his rights were not impacted by being ejected from this meeting. There were some questions asked with regard to what was the reason for the injunction to begin with, the harassment injunction. And I will tell you that Mr. Wagner had been harassing my clients for a long period of time, following them very closely in their vehicle, taking photographs of the Metzger's children who are under the age of 12.
This is all part of the record?
Yes. And you'll see the injunction that was issued. It's on page 12 of the Appley's supplemental appendix. This is a man who has been almost stalking my clients over a long period of time. So my clients took to carrying this with them in case anything would happen. And they would see him because he was basically following them closely, stalking them, using binoculars to observe their children in the yard, and taking photographs of them while wearing a Speedo. This man is not conducting himself
who's
as a proper citizen.
I'm sorry. Who's in the Speedo?
Mr. Wagner, while taking photographs of my client's children. That was one of the reasons that this injunction was issued. So, yes, my clients began to carry this injunction with them for protection.
But they were dismissed. The injunctions were dismissed.
The injunction was later dismissed.
And why was that? I mean, was there a court order or was that done voluntarily? I'm just curious.
There was another hearing, and the court found that there was not sufficient evidence to uphold the injunction at that time. I believe that based upon the plain language of the injunction, which is pursuant to Wisconsin Statute 813.125, these officers had no choice under the circumstances but to arrest Mr. Wagner, and that was what Judge Randa had concluded, that under the circumstances, not only did they have a legal duty to do so, but they had no choice but to arrest Mr. Wagner under the circumstances. And because of that, because there was probable cause, there is no Fourth Amendment violation, and there can be no conspiracy. Therefore, the judge properly dismissed the claims against my clients and the other defendants in this case. Are there any other additional questions I might answer?
I gather not. Mr. Mihalik, thank you.
Thank you.
We'll hear now from Ms. Janicek.
May it please the court, counsel, on behalf of Officers Kelly and Herbst and the Washington County Sheriff's Department, I join Mr. Mihalik's arguments with respect to the legality of Mr. Wagner's arrest, and I'd like to spend the few minutes I have, looking at the other established legal principles that require dismissal of the claims against the officers and the Sheriff's Department, even if the court were to find that there were no probable cause under the facts and circumstances here involved. And I'm referring to the doctrine of qualified immunity, which the court has referenced, which protects the officers from liability in this instance, as well as the requirement that in order to hold a municipality, here the Sheriff's Department, liable for the unconstitutional actions of an official, one must plead and prove a policy or custom of the municipality that caused the constitutional violation, or at a minimum, that the official who committed the constitutional violation had policy-making authority. We touched a little bit on the matter of qualified immunity, and the county defendants would, in this instance, maintain that the officers are entitled to qualified immunity because under the undisputed facts and circumstances here involved, a reasonable officer could believe that probable cause to arrest existed, that is, that the arrest was lawful. As has been indicated, the language of the harassment injunction prohibited Mr. Wagner from being on the same premises as the Metzgers without limitation. Mr. Wagner was, in fact, on the same premises, and I would note that in this instance, premises refers to the parking lot as well as the actual meeting hall with respect to the town hall, and that the state statute required the officers to make an arrest when a harassment injunction was being violated. The issue here, contrary to opposing counsel's contentions, is not whether the officers put Metzgers in the meeting. The Metzgers had an unfettered right to be present at that meeting, whether that is in the parking lot or in the town hall, regardless of whether Wagner was present. The issue is whether a reasonable officer reviewing the injunction, which barred Wagner from being on the same premises as the Metzgers, and knowing that Wisconsin law imposes on the officers a duty to make an arrest when an harassment injunction is being violated, could believe that Wagner was in violation of the injunction and that he had probable cause to arrest him. This is a doctrine that has been judicially developed to shield public officials from liability for reasonable mistakes. It requires only that a reasonable officer could mistakenly believe that probable cause existed. And that standard, we would maintain, is clearly met in this instance. With respect to the claims against the Sheriff's Department, the law is clear that unless you have the requisite pleading and proof of an official policy or an appropriate official making a decision that violates constitutional rights, the municipality is likewise immune from liability. And the case law spells out very clearly what standards govern it. In McTeague versus City of Chicago, the court indicated that to have a policy, there must be an express, in effect, written policy or a practice that is so permanent as to constitute a custom or usage. In Eversole versus Steele, the court made clear that in order for an official to have policy-making authority, he must have final authority to make rules for the municipality or here the Sheriff's Department.
Ms. Janicek, your time has expired, so I'll have to ask you to summarize.
Thank you. In conclusion, the trial court, the district court, properly dismissed the complaint against the officers and the department. There was probable cause to arrest, but even if there wasn't, the officers are entitled to qualified immunity, and Mr. Wagner has wholly failed to plead or prove the necessary municipal policy or custom in this instance. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Janicek. Mr. Bishop has 2 minutes.
Thank you. In response to that argument, the only policy that the Washington County Sheriff's Department had in effect was that the on-duty supervisor, the lieutenant, in this case Martin, would have the final decision-making authority. That authority was delegated to him in their own policy and procedures, which is part of the record. In addition, there was no policy about how to address an harassment injunction situation such as this. The fundamental reason for the appeal here is that two very significant facts were missing from the decision and order that our position is makes this case different, makes this case in a position where it needs to go to trial. Specifically, that upon the deputies seeing the Metzgers in the parking lot, why did they then escort them into the meeting? That's not reasonable for them to be escorted. An injunction is not an offensive weapon to be used as an eviction tool. The duty is on Mr. Wagner to avoid the premises. He did that by going into the town hall meeting, even assuming that their argument about them seeing him in advance was accurate. And the second thing is, as was stated by counsel, Mr. Wagner has an unfettered right to petition his government. And yes, he had an item specifically on the agenda, which we contend was why the Metzgers were there with their injunction, asking the deputies specifically, quote, to enforce the injunction and remove him from the premises. That is not probable cause to arrest for an injunction. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Bishop. Our thanks to all counsel in the case. And the case will be taken under advisement.